Welcome to the Del Walmsley Radio Show. Listen and grow as Del questions the status quo, encourages you to think differently, and empowers you to make a better life. Get ready as Del challenges core beliefs, seeks the truth, and reveals the roadmap to the lifestyle you really want. And now your host, multi-millionaire, national award-winning investor, CEO and founder of Lifestyles Unlimited, Del Walmsley.
Welcome to Del Walmsley Radio Show. Today is Tell Del Tuesday, and with me here today is a guest that I enjoy having every time I've had him on. He's been just a pleasure ever since he joined up to Lifestyles to spend time with. And today I've got him back here because he's got really some insider information that not everybody would have, being that he's been in the industry for a long, long time. Interesting thing about it is what I really usually like to present about Robert before he comes on is that he was in the industry. He was an executive VP, one of the largest property management companies in the country, and did that for many, many years. And yet it took one of his friends, John Ridgway, which is a friend of mine, to beat him up for years that he should get into the industry himself and actually own real estate. That's the story we normally present. But Robert, let's give him just a short bit of that today. And then I got other stuff I want to get into, like the market, where it's at, and all the really great things you've done with all these deals you've got in and got out of and so on and so forth.
I did the typical go to college where they don't teach you anything about finance or tax codes or anything else that teach you and train you how to be a little worker bee, right? I followed that map and worked my way up from on-site out of college all the way up to the big corner office running the big company. I saw these guys like one level above me getting really rich. Finally, as you mentioned, after Ridgway for years got me to finally go to a seminar with Lifestyles, and I learned about tax code. I learned about the finances, and you know, I'd always been scared to be an entrepreneur. I was like, I can't go do that on my own.
Now, you've really done a lot of deals. I'm looking here at your resume. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 sales. Tell us what your plan was as you worked your way through your portfolio coming into this.
You know, it's funny that you ask that, because when we started, we thought, again, coming from my background of being with big companies, I thought, gosh, how big can we get? 3,000, 5,000 units. And then quickly realized you don't need that kind of scale to make even more money than you've ever made in your career because of the tax benefits and just the real estate rules. So we thought, why would we want to go to do that kind of brain damage and build a big company? So we've changed a lot, and we've done 7 deals. I think I've done about 4,000 units between being the lead investor and a key principal on deals since we joined in 17. But right now we have two deals left. We sold all but one right before everything crashed, so our timing was perfect. And that's just kind of been our plan, and we've readjusted. I was like, we don't have to be this big behemoth.
And no doubt. And if you cash in right before everything crashed, then you are sitting pretty. When you did do that, when you sold out and you pulled money off the table, you pulled some assets out, what did you do with the money? Just out of curiosity, people want to know. You know, they always ask me that. What do you do when you get out?
Well, part of it, unfortunately, because we sold 3 really big deals, a 460-unit deal, a 360-unit deal, and I think that same year, 250. So we sold some really big assets that made a ton of money. So I had a big tax bill, and I really swallowed hard on that. But I thought, yeah, I'm paying just a small fraction of what we made, so put it in perspective, right? But we reinvested last August, in a really nice deal that a portfolio had to sell. I mean, it's a 2003 deal, so putting it back into real estate. And I invested as a passive investor in quite a few deals before the end of the year, so that was interesting. I've always wanted to be lead only, control my own fate, but then I've learned through the friendships with Lifestyles, made some really good friendships and with people I trust. So I'd invested in several of their deals.
So that's interesting. As you know, you go through this, one of the things that now that I've been doing this for 35 years, which I think you might have done it longer than that, but one of the things I realized was that you don't need to transact every year. you can sit back and you can wait and cherry pick once you're at the top. Once you got enough money and you got enough income, you can just cherry pick and then the deals get better. Have you found that yet?
Absolutely right. You don't have to be desperate seeking your deal. You're not trying to say, gosh, I've got to grow to a certain size for my ego. Exactly right. You're able to sit back and, I mean, this is a great time to be sitting back with dry powder, with cash, waiting for deals to come to you. And that's how we got the deals that we closed in August. And we went against 40 other bidders. Three of us were in the finals. Two of them were national players. So I'm really actually surprised that we got it. But they liked our story. They liked that we had the capital sitting there and ready. So, yeah, absolutely. We're able to cherry pick now and not just take something. And I've gotten a little bit more picky and sophisticated in, like, what submarkets I'll go into and what I'm looking for.
Yeah, that's interesting. It does get easier as you get going into it, there's no doubt, especially if you've made the right decisions along the way. And if you're smart enough, like you've just said, to realize you don't need massive volume. Instead of being 10 or 20% of a, 4,000 units, if you're 100% of 400 units, that's even more, right? And you get more of the depreciation that way also, by the way. So it's interesting on this stuff. Speaking, and that's really what I wanted to bring you on and talk about today, is that the marketplace as of right now has changed. I mean, it has radically changed from, it was so bad 2 years ago, 18 months ago, where, 2 and 3% interest rates and prices were to where there was almost no cash flow, in fact, negative cash flow, and just crazy stuff people were doing, adjustable rate mortgages. And did you get caught up in any of that, or did you just fly right by that, selling out at the time when you saw it coming?
We sold all but one deal that, in hindsight, being 2020, I wish kind of we had sold, but we viewed it as a deep value add, and we have blown past our pro forma on NOI, on rental income, by hundreds of thousands. We've just really knocked it out of the park. So we took out what's called a bridge loan, and in my mind is a construction loan, because I thought in 18 months, we're going to be able to totally get into permanent financing. Well, no, I don't, at least I sure didn't see interest rates going from almost nothing to 5% is the record spike. So on that one, we got caught. And now we're like so many people over in the middle of doing a refi. But outside of that, I mean, we got very lucky and our timing was perfect on the other ones that we sold.
So there's this group of people out there, and I'm not talking about necessarily lifestyles people, but in just general, the world of syndication just blew up with a bunch of people had no idea what they're doing in the last 10 years. Really, the last 5 years, it got even worse when they allowed crowdfunding. Now you get the dumbest of rock people in the world doing this stuff. They never operated even a rent house before they took over. Those people right now, Robert, are starting to filter through. The average price across the board, what I'm seeing in all my real estate companies out there, what I'm seeing as a buyer, 20% across the board reduction from what it used to be in prices, 40% in many, many cases from what it was, what they paid for it even. And sometimes even 40% won't even get you, you can't even buy it for the note and make sense of it. Are you seeing that stuff yet, Robert?
Yeah, absolutely, especially stuff that was bought like 2 to 3 years ago, right before the market crashed. And that's really, we're kind of in a frozen pattern right now because a lot of those owners don't want to sell. They're getting closer to where they're gonna have to sell, and then I'm afraid that's gonna reset the market at these lower valuations, which depends on what side you're on. If you're looking to buy, it's a great time to buy, and valuations going down means property taxes should go down as well, right? So, but yeah, you have so many with the zero interest, free money, just so many people making really, really bad decisions, and now we're weaning out the good operators from the bad operators that probably should have not have ever been.
Yeah, I've noticed that also. There was a lot of people that were really good at syndicating. They were good at raising capital and buying deals because they'd pay whatever the market wanted for them. It's real easy to win the bid when you, it's not your money and you don't care.
Yeah, and I've seen syndicators, like I actually invested in one deal out of Outside Lifestyle, bad choice, but they had all kinds of hidden fees. They brought in an equity partner that was preferred, so it diluted our percentage, all these kind of things that Lifestyle's against. But a lot of these syndicators, they were more concerned about the fees, the transaction money they were making, not on the operations of the property, not if it was a good asset or not. And now they've been caught with their pants down, but a lot of them don't seem to care because they made so much money on the fees. Well, the investors care because they're the ones that have gotten the short end of the stick.
For people to really understand this, I'm going to throw some numbers out there, and you can go yay or nay. I don't believe them, or I don't see them, or whatever. But I was seeing stuff at the peak of the market that was selling at 4 cap rates on pro forma numbers, which means it was probably a 3.5 cap on real numbers, right? Now I'm seeing, I just signed a letter of intent on a deal, 7.25 cap rate on real numbers, actuals. And the moment I signed that letter of intent and sent it in, we had an agreed deal. I got an email from a guy that says, Dell, I got two properties that my friend is bringing to market in a month or two. I'll get them to you right now for 7.25 cap rate. I'll bring them right to you at 7.25. But you've got 2 months before they're even due, so you can get in there and be aware of the property and take it over and know what the heck's going on and blah, blah, blah. And I go, man, that's just a perfect – he dropped it right in my lap. And so I'm sitting here thinking to myself, I guess 7.25 is the number now, huh? What do you think?
Well, that's the mystery, is like, where is stuff going to land? I mean, we sold right at 2 years ago two deals that were sitting next door to each other at a 2.75 cap rate. And I was told by the brokers that that was the lowest cap rate they've ever seen in DFW. So, I mean, we totally got a screamer of a sale. But, yeah, now I'm seeing stuff coming across my desk. It doesn't make sense at 6%. So that doesn't surprise me at all that stuff is resetting at that kind of rate.
Yeah, it's just, it's interesting.
I mean, that's a huge swing in 2 years.
It really is. And, you know, you have to think that there's going to be a swing back of some type.
Right.
Not all the way back. In fact, I hear people screaming. I had a guy email me the other day saying, Dell, I'm in one of these deals that's upside down, but my lead says that it'd be okay because interest rates are going to go way back down this year. And I said, I don't know who's telling you that. I mean, I've seen it. I've heard it out there, you know. The markets and mill chaps want the interest rate to go down. Everybody wants the interest rate to go down. It will, you know, free up a lot of capital out there, a lot of properties that could get sold then. But the Fed keeps coming back and saying, but wait a minute, you know, and that's all they're saying is, but wait a minute, not yet, hold on. But maybe next quarter. And what I don't get is why people continue to make business decisions, Robert, based on maybe. You know, hold on, maybe, what if? And when they really should be making on the fact that right now the interest rates are where they're at, and whatever they do, even if they tick up or tick down, you got to make a business decision based on what can I do with this property once I buy it. If you've been to the 2-day, which I'm pretty sure you have been, you realize that we teach what you do as a property management company, how we go in and reposition the property, tighten up the rents. And I say tighten up the rents in a marketplace where rents are not going up right now. And what I mean tighten up is, okay, you've got half your pay rent roll. It's at $1,000 a door. And let's assume they're all the same size same units, okay, just for ease here. You got half your units, you know, that are at 1,000. You got half your units at 800. And you're telling everybody on the street the rent's 1,200, because that's just the stupid stuff management companies do, because they're always trying to sell the pro forma. Hey, look, the rents are really 1,200. We just haven't got them there yet. But really, the rents are 1,000, and they've got people that haven't renewed yet at 800. The game right now, I would assume, Robert, is you go in there and you take those and you bring the eights to the 1,000. Am I thinking right about that?
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, we saw during the free money stage, people were like, "Oh, I'm going to upgrade every single unit and pop $300 and stuff." Well, that's not the reality. And honestly, I don't think you had to go that extreme before. It's just you had free money. But yeah, the market has completely changed. And as far as interest rates, when I kind of look at the macro perspective from reports I've read, people I've talked to, they said historically rates are about 4.5 to 5%. So don't be expecting them to go down to 2% again.
Hey, I'm going to pick that up after the break, because I have a different set of facts that I've seen. We'll take a short break. We'll be right back with Robert Tinning and the Dell Wamsley Radio Show.
reaching you with a roadmap to creating the lifestyle you really want. Keep listening. The Del Wamsley Radio Show returns in moments.
Need more unconventional wisdom that'll set you free? Subscribe to Lifestyles Unlimited on YouTube and binge content that will actually help you get where you want to go in life from people who are already there. With over 50,000 members and 32 years of proven success, there's so much more we want to share with you than what we have time for on the radio. On YouTube, we go beyond our shows and feature our best content from podcasts, interviews, expo, master's tour, fireside chats, special events, and more.
You're hearing the Del Wamsley Radio Show. Want more life-changing knowledge? Access our podcast and listen on demand at lifestylesunlimited.com under the radio tab. Now your host, Del Wamsley.
Welcome back to Del Wamsley Radio Show. With me here today is Robert Tinning. If you're just tuning in, Robert's one of our lead investors here that has been very, very successful. He started out, though, in the business as working in the property management company business, was the vice president, second largest management company. Natural transition over to this stuff. Not that everybody needs to be able to come from the business. In fact, most people here don't. And I've always thought it was interesting that Robert didn't get into it sooner after working there for so long. But back to what we're discussing before we went to break. You know, it's interesting. You said that you'd heard that the average interest rate was 4-something. I don't know if that's just like the last 5 or 10 years that that's the average, because I looked up what the average was for the last 50 years, and it was 7% interest rate for mortgages. It was mortgage rate average was 7-point-something percent interest rate. And, I guess it's because I started when I was 30 years old. Interest rates were 11 or 12. And, Jimmy Carter days and all that garbage. And then they came down. And I remember when they got to 8%, we thought, man, this is the best ever. And then when they went to 7, they go, like, they're just throwing money away. And they got to 6, it was like people became blind. You can do anything. And then, you know the rest. From there, you came into the business and it went from 6 to 5 to 4. And people just went money crazy. They just lost it. And they no longer looked for the opportunity in the deal. Robert, what do you look for when you look at the opportunity in the deal?
Well, I think first to your point, I agree. What I was trying to say is that, I hear some people saying, well, gosh, interest rates are about to get cut. That's the upside. We're going to, refinance in a year or two at 4-3.5%. And I'm like, I would not count on that. That's wishing upon a star. Because of the historical rates, I just don't see them going that low again. But what I look for in a deal is just, the bones of the property. Is it in good shape? What's the buying price, obviously? But do the numbers actually work without a lot of hope and prayer that, gosh, we think we're going to get 7% rent increases? I've never seen the last couple of years, the run we've had on rent increases, I've never seen in 35 plus years in the business. I've seen a lot of years where you go negative, kind of like we have been the last year, but it's very, you may go down 2%. If you're lucky, it goes up to 3 or 4% growth. But these huge 10%, 12% increases, I've never seen in my career before a couple of years ago. So these guys coming in and projecting 7% increases every year because they're so much better than the guy that already owned the deal, I'm like, yeah, I don't believe you.
Yeah, that's interesting because I never saw that either. That's the phenomenon of massive inflation. I'm going to throw that one, and I'm not really politically inclined to try to blame problems on politics, but I'm going to throw that one on the inflationary status of the Democrats just pumping the entire country with money from all different ways they did it. Et cetera, et cetera. There's so much money. You're just throwing money at things. And housing became very, very expensive. I mean, you couldn't buy a house. And so people had to rent. What do? We crush it. Now, the other thing that's interesting is that the supply and demand curve for apartments, you've been in the business a long time. You know how much that messes with everything, right? So builders are kind of knee-jerk reaction people. They see that there's not enough housing. Wow, that singles, let's build. And a couple of years ago, they put into motion what is now probably the largest amount of brand new units being dropped on the market since I've ever been around. I mean, it's just historical numbers. But now everybody sees that's too much. And so the new construction permits has gone down. In other words, the builders see it. But in the near future, knowing what you know about being in the business at the, you know, the high-end property management company business, as they start to bring these things online and absorb this issue, what properties do you think are the most insulated away from absorption?
My opinion would be workforce housing, and the reason for that is these developers got caught up with this interest rate spike as well, so they're paying 8%, 10% on their construction loans and saying, dear God, get me out of this thing, Mr. Management Company, just fill it up, get it leased, get it sold. So, you know, suddenly they're offering 2 months free, 3 months free on a year's lease. Well, suddenly that brand new A-plus property is competing with stuff from, say, 2000, 20-year-old property. So the rent gap is closing. And my only concern is does then that go to the B and the C? Does it trickle downhill? But that being said, the workforce housing is probably the most insulated from that, in my opinion.
Well, I agree with you. It's nice to see that we both think the same thing. So in my mind, the reason the workforce housing is most insulated is because people either lease where they lease because they want to or because they have to. So workforce housing has to live where it lives. And the people that live there aren't necessarily going to be accepted in the upper echelon housing units, both because they won't qualify income-wise, they won't qualify credit-wise, bad lease-wise, et cetera, et cetera. And or if you have a Class A apartment and you start putting purple margins in it, it won't be Class A very long. I mean, people will just move out on you. Workforce housing, those people pretty much, they are where they're at. And the other thing interesting, which is really interesting because you're in Dallas, maybe you can even shed more light on this, is that there is no more old stuff. They can't make old stuff. The old stuff is that there's only so much of it, and it kind of goes away. Unlike Houston, though, and this has always been interesting to me, Dallas actually eliminates old buildings. I saw you tear down that football stadium, blew my mind. I mean, it was gone in a second. Boom. And right. We've got a football stadium here. It's been here for 50 years. They can't get rid of it, you know? Does Dallas take down old buildings still?
They're getting pretty heavy-handed on that stuff. You don't see a lot of that. It more happens with the land becomes, the area becomes more attractive. So they're scraping it to build in retail or offices or something, you know, repurpose the area.
Yeah, I understand. Well, it's always interesting to me that how Dallas was different than Houston in that one way. And Houston, do you have a zoning up in Dallas?
Yeah, it's a huge difference. I mean, I lived in Houston growing up in high school, and huge difference between the no zoning down there and the zoning up here.
Well, you know, it's all opportunity to us, and you've got the experience. Do you think that if a great deal dropped in your lap, you'd come back? Get off your, you know, you're living the life of Roy now. You just, you know. Would you come back and buy another one and be a lead? Because the world wants to know, a lot of the guys have made a ton of money are sitting on the sidelines for the last year or two. And people are wanting to know, are these guys going to come back? Is this going to be interesting enough for them to get them off their chairs and off their couches and get back out there and buy some more of these deals and hit some more home runs? You think you'll come back?
I'm not afraid to buy. I mean, we just closed on our last deal in end of August, which was just a fantastic pickup. Super maintained asset, was owned by the largest institutional, and who panicked and said, we need to just sell this portfolio. So we picked off this property. The point being is that there are opportunities out there. So I keep watching. I keep having brokers send me stuff. My investors keep, you know, begging me, when are you buying your next property? There's opportunities out there, and we're entering such a buying cycle. I almost feel like I would be dumb to not jump in and take advantage of it.
How about just out of curiosity, I ask you this every time you come on, it tickles me pink. The people you used to work with, have they seen yet that it's real, that you didn't come crawling back to them?
That's been rewarding, is that the owners I worked for have become friends, and they actually, I think, well, I know, admire me for kind of jumping into the ring and doing this, like a whole new respect level. It's like, okay, we always thought he was just a worker bee, but I really admire him for getting involved at this level and doing this. And kind of, I've always thought, well, why didn't you just let me become a participant there? But in hindsight, I'm glad they didn't, because now I'm my own boss.
Yeah. I remember thinking that all the time back when I worked in the health club business. We, you know, I ran six clubs in one city. There was 400 clubs in 22 cities. And I thought, why do you keep losing your best people? And I'm going to go back to this. One of the first things that ever attracted me, Robert, to real estate was I bought my first eight houses or whatever it was, and I was making this money every month coming in, was that the money was mine, first of all, and that they didn't take anything out of it. The money had no taxes taken out of it, so all the money was mine, which I thought was interesting. But the other one was that it was going to be there forever unless I wanted to sell it and move on to something else, which compare that to being in corporate America, where if you do well, they raise your quota. Right. And they come up with these quotas out of nowhere. And I know in the property management business, you guys always had to have, what'd you call it? You planned a year in advance. You had a budget. Yeah. And I always thought to myself, those budgets are so arbitrary. And or, you know, the quotas they'd give you, you know, you've got to get this up to this and up to that. And if you didn't do it, they chastise you. But if you did it, they told you, well, see, that's what good marketing can do, right? That's what somebody else did. It's a good thing you work for me. We're a good team. And there was never any credit for the good, and there was always wrath for the bad. Do you remember that?
Oh, yeah. And John Ridgway and I have talked quite often. I mean, we kind of have parallel paths in the industry, but you do such a good job that they say, gosh, thank you so much for selling the portfolio. Good luck to you. You're like, wait, what? So you had to find another job 5-6 months later as you're burning through your savings and like, all right, let's start this back up again. And my wife owned her own fee management company and would do such a good job that they're like, God, thank you so much for selling the asset now. Well, yeah. What are you going to do to replace this income? Well, we don't have any other assets right now. So we were always at the mercy and control. You know, I always say the puppet masters were pulling our strings while we were dancing for them and making them a lot of money. Whereas now, as you said, it's like, when do we want to sell? When do we optimize? Or do we want to hold? But we control those decisions.
Excellent. Well, sir, again, I'm going to thank you for coming on. And, hey, if you can come down in March, come down and see us. We'd really love to have you. I'm going to try to get a bunch of the big-name guys in, so we'll be a great reunion. The rest of you out there, remember this. It's not the money. It's the lifestyle. Have a great day.
Listening to the Del Walmsley Radio Show. Want more of Del's unconventional wisdom? Go to lifestylesunlimited.com and click the radio tab. Listen to past shows, hear podcasts on demand, and find out how you can change your life today. The Del Walmsley Radio Show is part of the Lifestyles Unlimited Radio Network.
The information and opinions you hear on the Del Walmsley Radio Show are those of the host, Del Walmsley, his guests, and his callers, and do not necessarily reflect the opinions of this station, its affiliates, its management, or advertisers. The Del Walmsley Show is for entertainment purposes only. Please consult a professional regarding your personal investment needs. Nothing presented on the Del Walmsley Show constitutes an endorsement, recommendation, offer, or solicitation to buy or sell any product or security.